This is Kelly.
And this is Amy.
And you're listening to Diary of a Death Investigator. Amy has a good one for us this week.
It was one that left me truly speechless.
We're recording in person again. So we didn't listen to the other one yet. So hopefully this is still working for us.
Why wouldn't it be?
I don't know. We're not very good at the sound. So everyone give Joel a shout out right now and thank him for making us sound better.
Way to go, Joel.
Two cheers for Joel. Whoop, whoop.
Woot, woot.
We're also really tired because we're recording this at night. So sorry, everyone. We're doing the best we can.
I'm on a 2-hour time difference here because I'm in a different... Well, I'm in California. I can say that. So
yeah. Okay, so this one's called I'm Not Afraid of No Zombies. Which we have talked about zombies on this podcast before.
Zombie spiders.
But it was zombie spiders. I don't think this person was talking about zombie spiders when she said that.
No, she wasn't.
Maybe at the time, like iZombie or something was out. I mean, zombie movies and stuff have become pretty popular.
I think it's called ignorance.
Oh, well.
I don't know. Maybe. This is why sometimes it's better to just say nothing and just cover your mouth with your hand to stifle.
Yeah. Well, things. She's just having some emotion.
I think sometimes you never know what you're going to say in grief or shock or whatever. So,
or on a podcast recording late at night.
Yeah, that too. So,
all right, Amy, take it away.
All right. So I think I said in my second half of my career that I was working out in what we called like our districts, because my first half I was working as an in-house investigator. So we just worked in the like immediate three counties. And so the second half I was like working from home, and then I'd be dispatched from home. So I could basically...
Districts. I think of Hunger Games.
Yeah, well, that's what it felt like sometimes was, you know, what did they say? Like, they'd hold up their fingers and what was their saying?
I don't know.
You remember what they say in the Hunger Games?
No, I just thought you were going to say I volunteer as tribute.
Well, sometimes I involuntarily volunteered to be tribute for that. Sometimes it felt like it was real life Hunger Games. Only the strong survive out there. So, yeah, you never knew what was going to be thrown your way. Yeah, sometimes you could be driving all over the state in 24 hours, like driving 4 hours one way just for one scene. So this one actually was close to like the border of another state, and it's out in the middle of nowhere. You know where like those big windmill turbine things are? Is like one of those kinds of towns.
Where you never get cell phone service?
Yeah. Exactly. So I was like, where the heck is this town at? They told me, I was like, I've never heard of this place ever. And it's for a good reason, because like when you look at the population later, it literally was 168 people in this town. I had to look it up. I was like, okay. So yeah, you get to this town, or you're approaching this town, and there is one street light, because it's like a one street town, and it's like their street light is one of those like blinking lights.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Not even like a real, it's not even like a real light.
Like the scary movie light.
Yeah. And it's like, where is everybody? Well, you know where everyone is?
In bed.
No.
At the bar.
They're at the scene. Yeah, because this is the latest news of the town of 168 people. I mean, you know, if you think about it, because like, you know, I teach now. I teach more than that many kids a day. So that's...
This is excitement for them.
It truly is, because you're like, wow, this town is a ghost town. Where is everybody? And then you turn the corner and you're like, oh, there they are. They're all on the front lawn, sitting on their coolers in their kitchen chairs.
No, they were not.
Yes, for real. Sitting out on their front yard, and they were like, hey, how's it going? Like with their coolers and stuff, and they're giving each other water and everything, sitting on the front yards, like waiting for the medical examiner to pull up. And I'm like, neat.
What time of day was this? I guess I pictured it as dark for some
reason. It's like 5 o'clock in the afternoon. It's like summertime, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, like still light outside. This is like their real life CSI, Kelly. This was big deal. This was big news for them. 5 o'clock news in real life. Real time.
IRL.
Going to you, Bob. What's going on? So they have one sheriff there on scene, and he looks like he is in a panic because as soon as I pull up, he is at my window and his eyeballs are like bugging, like giving me the look of like, you know, when your cat's sitting outside looking at you like, help me. That was his look like, thank God you're here. I'm like, oh my gosh. You just have to do one of those big like breaths like oosaw because you already know it's going to be one of those scenes like, God, give me the strength that I need to get through this day.
Or the drugs. No, I'm just kidding.
Something. So, yeah, you're like, okay, big deep breath. It's going to be okay. Don't bite anyone's head off. Be nice to the family. All these things. So I roll down my window and I'm like, hey, just let me get my stuff together here. And he's like, oh, okay, okay. Because like those guys that work out in those areas like that, they never get stuff like that. And like, yeah. I feel bad for them because they have to cover like this ginormous county that has a population of all of maybe 2,000 people in this entire county. And they're probably so understaffed. And like,
and he probably knew who it was because he's a small population.
Yes, exactly. He did know who he was. So I get out of the car because I'm like, you know, it's not just the whole townspeople. It's this guy's family, an extended family. And you already know it's going to come at you as soon as you get out of your car. You can't even get your stuff out of your car to like get prepared to walk in there. So,
well, wait. So how come they didn't have these people like away from you guys in the scene?
Because there's one of him and there's like 50 of them. So
he was outnumbered.
Yeah. I mean, in some of these places, like they're their own law enforcement. So yeah, it's like, good luck. I mean, they already know. So I get out and then it's like family's like already asking me all these questions, even though they know I just got there. And they're like, what time did he die? And I'm like, I haven't even seen him yet.
Like, you're like, putting your finger to your head, closing your eyes. Let me guess.
My psychic.
Psychic today. Let me channel my inner psychic powers.
Back to you, Bob. What's our weather forecast looking for at 6? I mean, seriously, I'm like, okay, so yeah, I'm like, all right, well, let me just grab my stuff here and let me go take a look at them and I'll have a lot more answers for you, I promise. Like, because I don't even know this guy's name. I don't know any of this stuff. Like, yeah, because it's just like, you have to be patient because they're just like, they're clueless and they're just like, they're stressed. So the one woman that she looked so young and I'm just like, I'm sorry. Like, who are you in relation to? She goes, oh, like I'm his ex-wife. And I was like, oh, like I had no idea. Like, sorry. I was like, well, I'll like leave you to be like the main person I talk to. And she's like, yeah, I'd appreciate that. And like, she was like super nice about it.
And so this he didn't have a current wife.
No. And there's like a story behind that. Like, and she was actually like really calm, which I will appreciate later. So I just like told the sheriff, I was like, can we please go inside so I can like just ask you things? And so other people aren't asking me things and like being over my shoulder like, what you writing? What is that? Oh, what's that diagram? What is that? What does that mean? Like, because, you know, that's what people do. So they make it their business. So I go inside. And I know at this point it is a gunshot suicide, or that's what it was reported as. So that's like why I even had to like drive all the way there. And so we go inside and he tells me that he does know who this guy is. He's had to deal with him quite a bit because this guy, he's known to drink, he abuses alcohol, and he's shown up to the house a lot because of domestic violence. So he's beat up his wife and the wife finally decides to leave him Like, this is just like a couple months before.
And not the ex-wife you met in...
That's her. Oh. Yeah. So they're separated. They're not quite divorced. But she also takes the kids with her. And they had been fighting about that a lot. And so they were finally going to court. And he was supposed to show up to court for them to decide who was going to basically get like custody of like the kids. And they were trying to get a hold of him for him to show up to court. Like, he didn't show up to court. And so they're like, huh? And like, that's, you know, odd, because why would he make such a big deal about keeping the kids and then not show up to court?
Right.
So then that's whenever they made the discovery of him basically deceased on his bedroom floor. And there was like, it's a long rifle. It's a 22 caliber long rifle. And it was like found underneath his legs. And so his house was pretty much a wreck. I mean, you can tell that he had had some anger issues, I think pretty much brought on by alcohol. And so he had like holes punched into the walls, and there was just trash everywhere, and there was like bug activity from all the trash. And he was found literally right in between like his doorway of like his bedroom. And he was found prone, so he was face down. And I mean, from his backside, he didn't look like, you know, anything was wrong, but you could see like the rifle underneath his legs. And so we had to flip him over. And then you could actually see a little bit of blood underneath his chin. And so...
Just a little?
Mm-hmm. Because 22 caliber holes are really small. But when you start moving someone, purge from the stomach starts coming up. So then it started coming out of his nose and your mouth. And you're like, oh. And it stinks so bad. And it's like this dark color. It's like black. And it's just, ugh. Oh, it's bad. But his whole face was just like purple from being face down. So like the lividity on top of him shooting himself in the head, like all that blood was just pulling straight to his face. So he just looked like swollen in his face. So basically all that blood had just pulled up into his face. So like 22s, typically what happens is when they enter into like the brain, they kind of like bounce around in the skull because they lose a lot of their energy when they enter into the skull. So that's if you get it in at the right angle, because a lot of times people will shoot themselves underneath the chin and it will, what they call like canoe out, where it will enter in under the chin and then it will basically go through their jaw and then exit out through like their nose. So they'll still be alive. Ugh. Yeah, it's terrible. So yeah, he was able to get at the right angle. They call that submentum entry when it's underneath the chin. So when we have anything that's considered a long, like rifle or barrel, so anything else like a shotgun or something like that, basically what we do is we measure from their longest fingertip all the way up to their armpit. And the reason why we do that is to make sure that they could actually pull the trigger.
Yeah.
Because like we always do that, and then we measure, you know, the gun from like the barrel to like the trigger as well. Now, I've seen people get super creative where they've tied things off to the trigger where they can pull it from there, or they've used their toes before where they'll put the barrel or the butt of the gun on the floor, and then they'll put the barrel underneath their chin, and then they'll use their toe to pull the trigger. But you get really weird angles that way. So I think to be successful, I think a lot of people will use like their thumb or something and pull. But we always do all the measurements. So you take a measuring tape and you take pictures of all that. It's really important that you get pictures of that, just because that's how you make sure that there's no suspicion of foul play. And then if you can see anything that looks like it's a longer range where it's not contact, then you know that there's foul play as well. So that's something that's important that we do scenes as death investigators as well. So yeah, everything looks like it's as it should be. You could tell that he was inebriated at the time. I mean, he was just making a mess. He like had broken the door like in the process. He had like the projectiles were kind of all over the place. Like he was just doing it sloppily, like just putting the projectiles in the gun because they were just like everywhere. So I've said, I think, multiple times on here that we have to bag the hands as well. Anytime it's either a homicide or a suicide, we always bag their hands. And it's especially important when we have any gunshot suicides because it protects like any of the gunpowder, right? So if we have someone that does like the gunpowder on the hands or protects like blood spatter. So,
which we learned about in the ABCs of Death investigation.
Yes, we did. So you guys should know. So I was looking in my bag for paper bags. And I'm like, of course I don't have them in my scene bag. So I had to go back out to my truck to get paper bags. And wouldn't you know, the eldest adult daughter was on scene at this point. And I'm like, why does it have to be this way? So I'm like, maybe she won't notice me. And I'm like trying to like speed walk over to my truck. And she's like, when do I get to see my dad? And I'm like, you don't. which it's like, you know, she is very obviously upset. And the mom is like being like very calm and everything, like trying to calm her down. And she is like, I'm not having this, and trying to tell me what to do. And I'm like, oh, no, you don't tell me what to do. So we were having like this face off of who's telling who what to do. I was trying to tell her nicely that you don't want to remember your dad this way. And she's like, I don't care. I want to see him. And I was trying to tell her he's been like this for a while and wait for him to be prepared by the funeral home. And she said, well, can I at least hold his hands? Can I at least hold his hand? And I said, well, our protocol is we have to put their hands in paper bags because of evidence. And she was like, well, for what? And I said, well, just in case if it's determined it's a homicide. And she was like, well, I know it was a suicide and I don't know why you're being so difficult. And I was trying to tell her that, you know, this is just our protocol. This is just what we do. And so I said, you can hold his hand over the paper bag. And I said, what we'll do is he'll just be in the bag and I'll just leave his one hand out of the body bag and it'll still be in a paper bag. And so she said that was fine. So,
but also at this point, Rieger comes in, right?
Yes, yes. And of course, you know, people don't know all this stuff either. And so I'm just happy that I could come to a compromise with her at this point, because this took me a long time. And I'm like, I just want to get this done. So, because, you know, you're still getting calls from other people at this point, and you're just like, I'm sorry, but like, this is not my only scene. So
was your transport driver there?
Yes, they were. They were waiting for me. So, and they have to transport bodies too from other places as well, from hospitals and nursing homes, because they don't just transport for the medical examiner. Like, they're right. Contracted out. So they had a long drive as well. And we finally, I get him hands bagged and we get him on the cot and everything. And then like, trying very carefully to get him down the stairs. Like, I remember the stairs being like wooden and they were kind of rotted out. And I'm just like,
was he a big guy?
No, luckily he was very skinny from alcohol.
Oh.
So I was like, I'm just glad that he's skinny. And I'm just like praying that the stairs like hold up while I'm like trying to like come down these stairs. And so like we get him down there. And I'm like, we get close to like the van or the transport van. I pull like the cot cover over and like I have his hand out, which is in the paper bag. And like the daughter's fine. Like she's like holding the hand over the paper bag, which she was totally fine with. She was fine this whole time. So.
And how old is she?
She was like in her early 20s.
Oh.
Yeah. She was an adult. And she wanted to be put down, you know, as a next of kin information as well, which that's fine. I asked her, you know, are you ready for us to like load him up and everything? And so I was finally able to do that. We got him loaded up and I sent my transport out and I was like, whew, yes, I'm done. So, you know, usually that's when you do your whole like spiel about like funeral homes and like what happens after that. It's like, what we do, like toxicology and like as far as autopsy and stuff. And then I said, because there was like blood and stuff in the house. And I said, you know, you guys, because they asked if we were like releasing the scene to them. I said, well, you guys might ask if you have like a close friend or something that can come into the house and maybe clean up some stuff for you guys. And then that's when the daughter says to me, I've held hands with a dead person. I ain't afraid of no zombies. So when she says this, my mouth, like, I feel it just literally drop open. And I had to put like my hand up over my mouth because I'm like, am I going to laugh or am I just in shock? Or
is she in shock?
I don't know. I don't know because, you know, I don't know her. So I don't know. I've heard people say crazy things before, but I'm like, that's your dad. So,
yeah. What is she saying? He's going to be a zombie?
Yeah. So I was like, well, okay, then you're free to go in whenever you want. So I look at the sheriff and I was like, well, you know, I'm going to go ahead and get out of here then. So you should do so as well while you can. So back to you, Bob. So I just go to my truck and I just try to get out of there as quickly as I can because, you know, it's just like, I don't want to be asked anything else. I don't want anything, you know, about zombies or anything else said to me because I'm like, I just explained everything and all these details as best as I could and said, you know, you can always reach out to our office about any other questions. And I'm like, and you literally just basically referred to your dad as a zombie. I'm like, great. Which, you know, it sounded like he wasn't necessarily the best to probably her and her mom and family. But I'm like, oh, man. So
he did kill himself.
Yeah, he did. He did. So,
and did he kill himself because he knew he wasn't going to get the kids in court or something?
Yeah. I mean, like just with his recreational behavior and the way that his home was, like the state of his home wasn't what it should be. And
he probably didn't have a lot of mental clarity.
No. Well, and I think obviously, you know, I guess she'd be estranged wife.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was clearly doing much better than what he was. And she was very calm and level-headed. So,
well, maybe she knew this was coming. Did he leave a note or anything?
I did not see a note. So I don't know if maybe someone found one and just hid it. So that happens all the time. We've had suicides before where people will alter the scene because they want to basically, like, for the dignity of that person. So, which we can usually tell when people alter stuff because it's hard to dress people when they're already dead and stuff like that. So,
you mean like if they killed themselves when they were naked?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Maybe they wanted the world to see. Maybe they wanted to go out like
in their birthday suit.
Yeah.
Man. I know.
In all their glory.
Huh. Naked as a jaybird.
As the day they were born.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so.
Well, that's kind of sad. I didn't know that was going to be sad.
It did not seem sad when I was there, trust me. It was bizarre and strange. And I was like, am I in some, like, Stephen King novel where it's like, am I going to be next? Like, are there real zombies or are there, like, crows or something that are going to come, like, swoop down on me because that light is flashing over there?
Oh, you could see the light from the house?
Yeah. It was weird. I did not like it. And all these people sitting on their coolers. I'm like, I'm being stared at. This is weird. I need to go.
Did anyone offer you anything to drink?
No. And I wasn't going to take it either. I'm not sipping that Kool-Aid.
Mm-mm. Zombie land. That's how they get them all.
Come be with us.
There's a scene.
No. So, yeah. No, thank you. I was out of there as fast as I could be. So, sipping on my pumpkin spice latte.
Oh, that's so gross. I'm still not a fan. Well, I think the last episode we talked about, Amy and I are looking into the crime cruise.
Mm-hmm.
So, we're going to buy our tickets for that. So, we're excited.
Party people.
And as always, if you have any questions, you can email us at kelly@diaryofadeathinvestigator.com or message us on Instagram, Diary of a Death Investigator. go like our episodes. And if you don't like them, leave us a review and let us know what we can do better.
Or else we'll feed you the Kool-Aid.
And until next time.
Bye.